Uncle Owen! Star 2 unit has a bad motivator, look!
Having trouble with your droid? Your droid?
These two droids. Both are hardworking and will serve you well.
Droid. 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 We serve their kind here.
You're listening to We Serve Droids, your favorite monthly Star Wars podcast. I'm Scott.
And I'm Chris.
And we're back with another episode of The Mandalorian. We have gotten behind, but I'm sure our listeners and their ever-graceful attitudes have forgiven us that we're only now getting to Chapter 11.
Yeah, no one listens to us for our timeliness, let's be honest.
Our podcast is like our jokes, bad timing. But, of course, before we jump into that, we got to jump into some kind of game, right?
Yeah, I had a fun idea for an opener. So, you know, Star Wars, like a lot of sci-fi, you got a lot of great names for, you know, characters, especially maybe like the background or the lesser known characters that you might not be as familiar with. So what I thought I'd do is kind of dig through the bench roster here of characters from Star Wars and also... take a look at, you know, Star Trek, maybe see if, you know, I can get you to, you know, when prompted, to tell me if it's either from Star Trek or Star Wars, or maybe it's just one I've gone to like a online sci-fi name generator and pulled one out. How does that sound?
sounds like a lot of fun. I'm ready for this.
All right. Starting off here, let's go with a Toro Calican.
Toro Calican, he's the poor man's Han Solo from Mandalorian.
Exactly, yes. Season one. So that was kind of a softball, but just kind of a great example of a great name, I thought.
It is a good name. Nice to ease into the hot tub here.
All right. So this one might be a little more obscure. Maz Amada.
Maz Amada.
Yeah, not Maz Kanata. famous Union Buster. Right. And this is full spelling bee rules. So, or spelling bee like rules. You're allowed to ask for like the spelling and like, you know, anything but like origin, essentially.
If you could think you that will use help. It in a sentence.
Yes. Maz Amada is a character from sci-fi.
Maz Amada, I'm gonna guess,
and I'll say over the course of this, if you want a hint, I'll distribute some hints.
Oh, I'm gonna just blind guess for this one. Amada makes me feel Star Trek. Is it Star Trek?
So it's Amedda. Amada, Amada. I don't know how exactly it's pronounced.
Tomato, tomato. Amada, Amada. Let's call the whole thing off.
Yes. So this guy is actually, he's the guy you see next to Palpatine. He's the vice chair of the Galactic Senate, apparently.
Oh, up there on the middle of the Senate?
Yeah, on the dais. He's the blue guy with the end of the horns and like the stick of truth up there.
Yeah, that's a nice stick. I feel like the British Parliament has a guy that has to carry in a stick or something, right?
Yeah, like the mace or something like that, yeah.
Take a seat, young Skywalker.
So, moving on here. So, let's go with Kivas Fajo, or Fajo, F-A-J-O.
Kivas definitely sounds Star Trek. It's like Kivan. I feel like there's... Is he that weird? I'm gonna guess Star Trek, and I'm gonna like go for broke and guess. Is he that guy who like can't talk, but somehow he brokers peace treaties through like little dudes that talk for him?
You're close. He is indeed a creepy guy from Star Trek, but he's the creepy guy who like kidnapped Data for his menagerie on Next Gen.
Yeah, that guy's great.
Yeah.
The actor who plays him, he's great.
Yeah, he's in a bunch of stuff. He's a lot of fun. Let's go with Hawk Quinten.
Hawk Quintan?
Yeah, Hawk, Q-I-N-T-A-N, Quintan.
There's no way that's Star Trek. I'm going to guess, are we at a made-up one now?
That is a made-up one, Scott. That is straight off the sci-fi name generator. Nicely caught. Let's go with Simaloo, A-L-O-O.
Simaloo, who is who the Grinch stole a Christmas tree from.
I'd say this guy would be relatively at home in the town of Whosville. You might say he's dressed for it, maybe.
Well, that certainly sounds more Star Trek-y.
I may have thrown you with that one. I apologize. That was.
But I was leaning. I was honestly leaning Star Wars before but I don't know.
Your instincts were correct. This is one of the funny hat guys from Return of the Jedi behind the Emperor.
I did not know those guys had names. That's great.
Me either. Let's go with Akorem Lan. I think A-K-O-R-E-M. Akorem or Akorem Lan. L-A-A-N.
That sounds Star Wars. I have no idea. I'm going to say Star Wars.
He's the weird, like, Bajoran poet guy who was trapped in the wormhole for, like, 1,000 years on Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah. They're all like, you're our new leader. And he's like, congratulations, women can't vote.
Yes. You'll have to adhere to your castes now.
Right.
Who'd have thought this would have gone wrong?
Yeah, the guy from 1,000 years ago may have some regressive ideas.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
That's a fun poll.
Yes, some of these were fun to reminisce about. All right, let's go with Dathon. Just Dathon. D-A-T-H-O-N.
Dathon sounds really Star Trek. Is Dathon Star Trek?
Dathon is Star Trek.
What series?
Next Gen.
Is he like, again, this is just a blind guess. Is he like one of those like cadets who's like competing against Wesley for a spot in the Academy?
Oh, that's a solid guess. Those guys all have like just like one word last names. I'll say this is his full name. Like it's not just his last name, or he's not Mr. or Lieutenant.
Right. He's like Zod. That's just what he is.
Dathon's the dude from Darmok. That's apparently what his name. I always thought his name was Darmok, but I guess he was referring to something. Yeah, that's him.
I like that Dathon. You gotta fight an invisible monster with someone. You want Dathon.
Exactly. Let's go with Nolan Alcantar.
Nolan Alcantar.
Yep.
I really want him to be the guy who is like the 21st century capitalist that Data brings back to life and thinks like he can purchase the Enterprise now.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's got to be Star Trek, right?
He's very Star Trek soundy, but he is from the random generator.
Oh, I should have guessed. Random, you tricked me.
Our random number or random generator is forsaking us. All right.
It conquers all.
So, probably looking to wrap up here. Let's go with, I made way more than was feasible to do. Let's go with, Arctis Baran.
I thought this was going to be easier than it is. The Baran sounds very Star Trek, doesn't it? I'm going to go again and go out on a limb and say Star Trek.
You got it. He was the,
what series is he from?
He's from Next Gen. All right, so I'll say this is going to be the penultimate one here.
Okay.
All right, we've got Elon Sleazebagino.
He's the Death Stick Pusher from Attack of the Clones.
Yes, such a fun name. Finally, let's go with old, how about Bib Fortuna?
Our favorite majordomo from Star Wars was going to put me back.
I'm sorry, that's actually what you put on when you're eating a big old messy pile of tuna. But yes, that
sorry,
is...
Sorry, sir. It's three words. You didn't ask for a spelling.
Exactly.
I'm gonna call it a win. We did not establish what a win or loss would be, but I'm gonna call it.
Oh, as the officiator, I'm giving you the W on that one. That was very well done.
I said, we gotta win. please, please, it's too much winning.
All right, let's find out if we've got a winner of an episode of The Mandalorian. What do you say, Chris?
Let's do it, Scott.
All right. And we will hop into Chapter 11, The Heiress. So this is a lot of fun with the Razor Crest heading towards this moon, and its tailgate is down like a beat-up truck.
Yeah, it just looks like one of those cars you do not want to be behind on the highway under any circumstances. So how long do you think it's been? You know, they've been sublight here and this, you know, crammed in the cockpit.
I never can remember if we actually got like a time limit on the egg incubator or not.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it was all up in the air. So you think they've been out here for years? I mean, Baby Yoda doesn't really age, so there isn't a clear indicator. They've been right. those eggs are looking a little scarcer than they were even last time.
Right. She gets back home and the eggs pop out looking like half Mandalorian.
The thought of like just them hatching with like little Mandalorian helmets on, that's great. Right.
It's like 101 Dalmatians where like the boy ones are Mandalorians and the girl ones are frogs. Because that's clearly how genetics works.
Yeah.
We get this fun descent into the atmosphere, and did you catch who directed this episode, Chris?
None other than the reference I was about to make, the daughter of the director of said reference, Bryce Dallas Howard.
That's right.
It's a nice Apollo 13 reentry vibes here, right?
No, it's like almost the same shot. It's great. If only Tom Hanks had been played by a frog lady.
Oh, man.
What really makes this whole scene for me is, of course, the Admiral Akbar guy down there, you know, watching it re-enter.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's seen this before. Like, he knows what's coming. He's, yeah. Like, he's pulling his shoes on, you know, he's go ahead and pre-filling out the invoice for what's about to happen.
He's got to look at this plane coming in like he picked the wrong day to quit sniffing glue.
Yeah.
I think the scene where it falls into the ocean probably got the biggest laugh from me that The Mandalorian has ever gotten.
The timing was great. I mean, it was bang on, in my opinion. So much fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like seeing it getting fished out by this, like, ATCT, all-terrain crane thing.
I know.
this guy's cool.
I know, that thing is great, and it's in there just for a couple seconds, but man, like, so much fun. It's just, it looks like it's maybe purpose-built, like it's not just something some guy built, like a crane on top of an old AT-AT for.
Yeah, I love it, because there's another one in the background. It has a very, like, I don't know, like, kind of Gundam kind of quality to it. Like, I could see this in an anime. You know that, like, GIF people use of the Transformer that has like the crane where it's like penis would be?
Oh yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that guy a lot too.
I'm sure he has a name. We could spitball innuendo names for that guy forever.
Right. But yeah, I like this AT crane thing a lot.
When the Calamari approaches Mando, did you think he was speaking like not in English initially?
It felt like the audio mixing was off or something. It's so soft spoken.
Yeah, he's got a funny voice, but like I don't know, it was weird on the second watch through. I picked up on it immediately, so I wasn't sure if it was just me.
But he's a fun guy.
Yeah, I love his sweater is taking the internet by storm. Apparently, people want
the cable knit sweater is all the rage when this episode came out. He kind of lends a whole sort of Nordic vibe to the whole town, I feel like.
Yeah, this whole place has a very, yeah, exactly, like, North Atlantic kind of vibe to it, or Northern Europe kind of vibe to it.
I like how it seems like it's primarily, you know, Mon Calamari, the Akbar guys, and then Quarren,
the
squid face guys.
And then just the two fish, or the two frog people.
Yeah, they're going to stick out. But, I kind of like that because if I'm remembering like my Star Wars supplemental material well enough, I think the Quarren and the Mon Calamari are like historically like enemies.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And I like the idea that, right, it's still going to be the case that like they're still going to be suited for the same kinds of planets, you know? And I kind of like the idea that once you get off-world, like, it would turn out, like, as much as you hated each other, you still, like, would be more friends with each other than anyone else.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, water people got to stick together, that kind of thing.
Right, right. I think there's something to that. Like, you know, it's, I mean, it's almost like you support, like, rival football teams. Like, well, at the end of the day, like, you still have a lot more in common than, you know, someone who watches a different sport completely or something like that.
They're joined together in their mutual hatred of all Gungans, I guess.
This could have had some... That's what I would love to know. I'd love to ask the writers, like, did they ever consider putting Gungans on this world?
Yeah, I mean, just some other, you know, maybe water-adjacent species or things like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fun, nice reunion of the Michigan J Frog Lady and... Mm-hmm. and Slippy Toad here.
So I saw Slippy Toad was carrying something on his back for a second, and it's like a knapsack, but for a second I was like, oh god, if she has the eggs, what's in the container on his back? But my fears were quickly put to bed.
He's just got all buckets worth. He's been a busy guy these past few months. Yeah,
they were in sublight for a long time.
Right. He doesn't know, like, how critical those eggs are. Like, he's ready to fertilize at a moment's notice. Yeah. That's going to make for a very painful transition to this soup bar scene, Chris.
Didn't think about that.
But after the warm embrace of the frog people, they do lead Mando right into a bar with a very suspicious-looking liquid coming out of the overhead tubes.
Yeah. They kind of just, you know, like, he's, you know, been through hell for this, and he's like, yeah, just talk to that guy. We'll see you later.
Yeah.
We get business to attend to. It's like, at least...
Yeah, right.
At least, like, an introduction here or something.
Yeah, it just, like, gives him a pat on the shoulder. He's like, hey, it turns out that's not what I had in this backpack, so I gotta get home pronto.
Yeah, I think we also see, like, a reappearance here. Is it the Mon Calamari, or is it Flan, I think, that he gets paid early in Season 1 instead of Imperial credits? Is that right?
Oh, wow.
Is that a deep cut? I'm not sure.
That is a deep cut. I like that.
I remember the squishy money that Carl Weathers gives him.
So what do you think about the soup bar he ends up in?
I mean, they know their clientele, I guess. Like, the menu has been so, it's like, have you ever seen The Founder about Ray Kroc and McDonald's?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, this, like, the part of the movie is, like, them discovering, them, you know, the original McDonald's founders, that, you know, most of their menu is, you know, consisted of just a few items. And this place has taken it to a whole new level. They've just installed dispensers in the ceiling, and you get what you get, chowder-wise.
You know how when you go into, like, a Chinese restaurant and it's, like, all Chinese people there and you feel, like, really good about the place you've picked now?
Yeah, good point.
I feel like if you want Mon Cal food and you walk into this place, you're feeling, like, really strong.
Yeah. You know, there's no menus just because everyone knows what they want.
Yeah, that's the risky part. You're putting yourself in the waiter's hands.
Yeah. You've either got to do that or just, you know, like, find, like, the one dusty menu they have in back and just, like, hope there's pictures or something, because that thing's not going to be in English.
That's right. I love there's, like, when he walks in, there's almost, like, little plates, like, that have, like, different sauces, like, little containers for different sauces in them.
Oh, really? I completely missed that. That's great.
And then just kind of in the background as they're walking around, you can see, like, the, like, condiment table with, like, the various bottles set up. Oh, and I like the idea that this Mon Calamari guy has got, like, awkwardly, like, reach over you to light the candle on the table when you sit down, because every table has its own little candle there. It's definitely that, like, kind of, like, modern restaurant aesthetic. It's, like, a little too dark.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've run into that before.
Oh, yeah. Like, all the older crowds having to, like, pull out their cell phone lights to read the menu, things like that.
Yes. Yeah, little we know, Mando's got his, like, predator vision on to read the what flavors of chowder they have. And, of course, the tube comes down, and we can just get a big splurg of liquid, almost like a slurm out of a slurm queen. And of course, this has inspired tonight's cocktail.
So what are you drinking, Scott?
A medium dry martini, lemon peel, shaken, not stirred.
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 3 measures of Gordon's, 1 of vodka, 1/2 measure of quinoa lily, shake it over rice, and then add a thin slice of lemon peel.
Yes.
Tonight, I am having something that is inspired by the consistency of this bolo chowder, and it's of the smoothie variety, Chris. A nice seasonal beverage for our December 1st episode.
Really going in heavy on, you know, that December heat wave coming.
We're just future-proofing our podcast for global warming.
Yeah.
So what I have is 1/4 cup of frozen strawberries, 1/4 cup of frozen mangoes, but if you've got other tropical fruits you want to throw in, go for it. I have added to that 1/4 cup of yogurt. You know, use whatever kind you want, that may affect how much you like sweeten it or don't sweeten it later. Like, if you just use like plain Greek yogurt, you're going to need to sweeten this a lot. If you use vanilla or flavored, you know, you might not. And then I've thrown in 1.5 ounces of rum and 1/2 ounce of orange liqueur. And I've added to that just a little bit of honey and mixed it around in there. And so I guess this is what Amon Calamari. I did not come up with a name with this. Maybe I will edit a name in later. So anyway, you put all that in a blender, right? You run it till you got a nice smooth, slushy consistency, and you serve it up.
I'm just not realizing my choice to go with strawberry yogurt here, at least in the lighting conditions I'm seeing it now, it looks pretty close to the same color.
I don't know if that makes this drink more or less appealing to our listeners.
The live squid is optional.
Right. So Chris had a great idea on his, which is to throw in some gummy worms and to let those be garnished as tentacles hopping out of your chowder.
Yeah, there are also, I think there are a few like tentacle slurping scenes like later on in the show that it also plays well with.
It is like full Klingon ship gawk in this episode of The Mandalorian. It's funny that I remember last time you made a joke about a face hugger hitting Baby Yoda, and they pay off that setup in a very unexpected moment.
Yeah, right? The squid to chowder ratio, in my opinion, is all off here. But
which do you want more of?
Neither.
Yeah. Did that squid come down the little tube? Or is it just like in the bowl and it's like a sea monkey? Like it's dormant until it gets in its native chowder.
There's like a plot, like an especially like thicker part, like when he's dispensing the chowder, that I think is meant to be the squid.
Oh, okay, I did not catch that. That's nice.
It's really not something you want to pay too close attention to, honestly. for your own benefit, but yeah, I think it's in the tube. And I'm guessing it's, like, supposed to be there?
The way they all slurp down tentacles later, I can only guess. I wonder if it's the kind of thing, like, sometimes when you're lucky, the vending machine gives you, like, 2 sodas. Like, do you ever get, like, 2 squids in there?
Yeah, you get, like, the end of the run there, and it's just all squid.
Right. When it's like they're about to switch between breakfast and lunch, they're just trying to get all the squids on the plate they can.
Yeah.
That's when you want to go, right before they make that change.
Exactly. Just cash in.
I like how this Mon Calamari soup Nazi does not like anyone sitting at the table and just eating chips.
Yeah. You gotta order or make room.
He says it like there's some kind of line outside to get in. Yeah. Like, who is he kidding?
So, how do you think the Koran feel here about eating squid? You think there's like a little, I don't know. I think it's why they're here on this planet. They're the outcasts, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just a squid eat squid world out there, Chris. I don't. Are these their babies? Are they going full Baby Yoda on their own?
Oh,
what's
man.
Going on here?
Yeah.
boy, do they make that squid-faced guy from Return of the Jedi look like utter garbage with the way these tentacles are just kind of always, like, Davy Jonesing around.
Yeah, that's just progress for you. It's, I guess that's really why we don't see a whole lot of them, you know, in the foreground previously.
Oh,
it's
just probably pretty expensive for each one.
Yeah. But, yeah, speaking of, you know, Squid Eat Squid World, we're out here on the boat, right?
Yeah. I love their little trawler there. That's pretty fun to get out there on the ship, the fishing ship.
Yeah. It's a great mix of, like, you've got, like, one guy, like, you know, like, coiling rope, and one guy running the, you know, the Lieutenant Dan, like, fish puller in thing or whatever.
Yes. There is something about this scene that makes it very ominous before it all goes bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's some combination of the acting and the voice of Captain Squid and the music. I don't know to what extent you paid attention to the music, but it's got this sort of like pirate, almost like accordion quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, very nautical.
Or if it's just the, like, you know, seeing all this industrial equipment kind of puts you a little bit on edge, like this is the kind of place where people lose hands, etc. Yeah, you know,
you've got like the rusty cage with like the bent bars on it, and the boat's you know a little rough around the edges. I don't know. I'm trying to give the squid guy the benefit of the doubt the first time around. Like he's like maybe he's not ominous. Maybe that's just you know the way he is. You know, kind of the grizzled sea captain.
Yeah,
but. Not
yeah,
the case.
That's what's brilliant about it. I wasn't like convinced that he was a turncoat, but it was just like something's off about this.
Yeah,
and I just thought a testament to again the direction of this episode, the writing, everything about it.
You know, it's very like a you know very gray sort of overcast place, but it's you know you're at least I was willing to give that to just you know the you know sort of North Atlantic seaside vibes as opposed to you know anything kind of shady. Are inherently shady.
So I'm confused. Does this boat have a monster that lives in it? Or were they fishing for the monster?
I had the same thought, yeah. After my second watching, I'm guessing that this thing has like a monster that they are transporting for whatever reason and they were going to feed it. And that's why they just dropped the fish into it.
I see, because they talk about like having not fed it earlier, so it sure seems like it lives there. So they're monster transporters, and so maybe the fishing is just fishing for it? Like, are they also commercial fishing, or are they just trying to feed the thing as it gets from A to B?
I mean, I've got a feeling that their business model is just, like, luring people into the boat and then feeding them to the monster. That's, I mean, after the fact, that's my thought. Like, this, I don't know, I'm really not sure like what you'd do with the fish monster thing.
Yeah, I'm also curious what happens if like what was their plan if the monster swallowed Mando? Like, they just wait for it to like poop out the Beskar?
Yeah.
Or
I don't know. You don't call that thing the sea sarlacc?
Yes, that's great.
But yeah, it has a very sarlacc-y kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, but, we know sarlaccs love eating Mandalorian armor.
That's true. But yeah, I'm guessing they were just hoping it would just kill them because. No one's got time to wait on that kind of digestion, you know?
No. But not for long, because we get three new Mandalorians rocketeering right into the scene.
Yeah, I did not see this coming.
Mm-mm. No, it's a lot of fun. And then the part where the one Mandalorian jumps into the water, they're just all, you know, straight up action in a real fun way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is not, you know, Timothy Oliphant in Boba Fett's armor. These are the real deal here.
This episode made a friend of ours, the great Garnett, contact me and ask me, Chris, if the Kaminoans found the world's worst Mandalorian to clone. And that all these guys look like they could have kicked Jango Fett's ass.
Yeah. So is Jango Fett a Mandalorian is I'm still unclear about that.
Yeah, so the actual canon response is that the jury is still out.
Okay, I was guessing it was still a matter of debate. but
yeah, there's an episode of the Clone Wars, I think, where a guy says like, oh, he's no Mandalorian, he just wears their armor. He's like talking to a Jedi, like there's reason that he could be lying.
Mm-hmm.
So unknown, but either way, these guys all look like they would have made quick work of Obi-Wan Kenobi in that rain battle on Kamino. Right.
And I guess, too, we're about to learn there are different definitions of what a Mandalorian is, right, Scott?
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. Your mainline Mandos and your cult Mandos. Yeah.
So was it a bit awkward to find out that, you know, maybe Mando's on the wrong side of cult vibes here? Something like that.
It's like he walks into Salt Lake City and it's like, hey, where's everybody's second wives around here?
It's like, ugh, sorry. I have to break it to you.
Are you like aware enough of the Clone Wars plots to for the name Bo-Katan to have meant anything to you?
So slightly. I can give you my rundown of my incomplete knowledge, which I still have not corrected because I wanted to keep it while we were recording. So
listeners could revel in your ignorance.
Exactly. This is a service I provide. So from my very, very shoddy watching or knowledge of Clone Wars, she is, I think, the sister of the former ruler of Mandalore. Is that correct?
That's right. And this, okay. Yes.
And she is like the more, I don't know, like, how would you describe it? Like the more
chaotic evil.
Yeah. Like the more like fighty of the two. Like,
yes.
Anyway. Yeah. So the more fighty one, and that's about it. I think that's my knowledge of,
Okay. So a big plot point, that I guess you probably picked on by the end of this episode, in Rebels, she gets given the Darksaber.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That we see Moff Gideon have at the end of last season.
And I'm aware that I believe Maul took the Darksaber at one point from, I believe, someone from Death Watch. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's correct.
Was that pre or post Miss Katarn's here possession of said Darksaber?
That's pre. So Maul has it before she has. Maul has it in the Clone War era. Mm. And then it's like right before A New Hope that it ends into Bo-Katan's possession.
Okay. So I had, I guess, maybe the preconceived notion, just given my, you know, ignorance here, that the reason Moff Gus had it, or, you know, I've been calling him Moff Gus because Breaking Bad, but the reason Moff Gus had the saber was because he was the sort of the pillager of Mandalore. Is, I guess, what they appear to be setting up, but it sounds like he got the saber post Mandalore's fall. Am I correct in saying that? Or would have had to have gotten it?
Yeah, I mean, so the problem is that you wanted to play the dummy on this episode, but we're both dummies. Because I've never been able to nail this timeline right in my head either, partly because I think they're kind of making it up as they go.
Okay, and that's probably the case.
But I don't think that's... I don't think that your read... I don't think either of your reads is out of the question.
Okay. Because given how they've treated Beskar and, you know, stuff like that, it's very, you know, like lost sort of, you know, lost sort of heirlooms or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the vibe I was getting. But anyway.
Yeah, you walk into Los Pollos Hermanos and it's got like a Cracker Barrel vibe of like old beat up Mandalorian like tubas and stuff on the wall.
It's just like, you know, the British Museum with all the things in there that you know, a lot of people want back.
Right, all the stolen artifacts for the past 500 years.
Yeah.
We'd like our mummies, please.
Yeah. To my limited credit, I will say I at least recognized, you know, that, oh, these people are like real deal Mandalorians from, you know, some Mandalorian plot in Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm. And this woman, the woman who is in Battlestar Galactica, she also does voice Bo-Katan in the Clone Wars.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I did not know that. That is awesome. Is it Katie Sackhoff? Is that right?
Yes,
probably pronouncing that
correct.
Incorrectly. So there's really no one to get upset about this live action portrayal, right?
Right, right, yeah. It's like when they casted Patrick Stewart as Professor X, like since he just is that person in real life, you can't really be mad about it.
Exactly.
Look, sir.
What have we here?
Look, sir.
Oh, what a mess.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see.
Look, sir.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Yeah, so we have some ideological discussions here, and Mando retrieves Baby Yoda and jets off the boat. Is that right?
That's right, to set up the exact same fight scene all over again.
I mean, were you really satisfied with just this, you know, beating up these guys in this boat? You got to take out the whole family to make sure there's no revenge down the line.
That's right. So after part two of this fight, right, they make the awkward invitation of buying him a drink, even though they know he doesn't remove his helmet.
Yeah, at least the marshal didn't know when he asked him to have a drink.
Right.
That seems to be a common problem. It's a thirsty life being a Mandalorian.
Well, in honor of their buying Mando a drink he can't drink, what do you say we take a pause to refill ours?
Sounds good.
Is this where they rope him into their heist plan?
Yeah, I think they lay out that there's the Imperials are using the plunders of Mandalore, right, to buy weapons.
Yeah, it has one of those fun, like, movie cuts where the conversation almost moves seamlessly from one location to another one that looks like it would have been really hard to get to.
Yeah, like two very, like, disparate scenes where, like, the conversation would have naturally continued in the meantime.
Right. Like, they cut to them on top of the ship from the milk bar, and all of a sudden they're talking about something completely different.
Yeah. It's like half an hour later. Completely right. Lost the thread. Right.
I like this. I love a heist setup scene.
Oh, yeah. You get the, you know, take a look at that over there. Here's the guards. Got to go in. They got to keep to this altitude when they're here, etc.
Yeah, they're outside the airport scheming up the Lufthansa heist.
Ah, nice one. Yes, I like that. One thing I did notice on my second watch back here, Baby Yoda's in the cockpit when they're doing all this.
Everyone knows when you got a kid, you put them in the cockpit of a jet when you need them to wait somewhere. That's like Qui-Gon parenting there.
Exactly. Especially when they've demonstrated they're, you know, very good about not randomly hitting switches and stuff left unsupervised.
Yeah, they're lucky that Baby Yoda didn't try a spin. That's a good trick.
Yeah. Their saving grace is probably it's too broken to do anything at this point.
Right.
So, yeah, too dangerous to bring Baby Yoda along, so we have to go put, you know, our good frog friend's reproduction into further peril. So, Mando leaves them with Baby Yoda. Leaves Baby Yoda with them, and we get, like, this fun hatching scene, right?
Yeah, that's fun. I like that a lot.
So, do you think Baby Yoda's thinking, oh, even more delicious, or... He's happy at the prospect of new life, or he's having horrifying realizations about what's transpired last episode.
Right. Wait, what? He just vomits all over the table.
The squid comes back up from earlier.
And then eats one of the babies. They just double down on this.
Yeah, on their line ending. But
I think that in the annals of fun Star Wars props, this egg gumball machine incubator is up there for me. I really like it.
It is a lot of fun. You know, it's got like the Star Wars impracticality about it a little bit. Like it's like a yes. Backpack. It's a backpack that has no lock that, you know, is holding these impossibly fragile things that can't even go into hyperspace.
Right. It kind of looks like something that you would have bought from, like, Spencer's in the 90s. Like, it's sort of lava lamp adjacent.
Yeah, you're right there. Yeah, it does.
Like, a 14-year-old would have had this in their room. You want to plop this thing right down next to a beanbag chair, and you are just chilling with your friends.
Exactly. Like, posters, blacklight, you know, you name it. You got that Spencer's gift card for Christmas and you bought out the store.
That's right. This is top shelf Spencer's material here.
Yes.
You better have those units from the soft lanes repaired by midday or it'll be hell to pay.
We'll see you in hell. See you in hell. See you in hell.
And they're off to the heist, right?
Yeah, there's some really cool shots here of the cruiser leaving and then them, you know, jetting after it.
Immediately, the enemy's alerted to the presence. You know, there's no surprise now. And I think what I love most about this whole climactic scene is cutting back to the cockpit.
Oh, yeah.
Every so often.
So this is taking place, what, like half a dozen years after Return of the Jedi? Like, what's mm-hmm. what's going through your average Imperial's, like, mind day-to-day at this point, do you think? Like, the Emperor's dead, like, we're, I don't know, on the run a lot. I'm taking weird orders from this moth I've never heard of. You know, I'm 60 years old and I'm just piloting this cruiser around. Am I still getting paid? You know, like, what is my motivation for continuing to do this?
Right, right. Yeah, it's not fear, or it's not inevitability, right? Mm-hmm. It's not yeah. like, well, the Empire is all there is, so I have yeah. to do this.
Yeah, it's very much in question at this point, right?
Right. I mean, are they all, like, Chaos is a Ladder, Peter Baelish kind of guys?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of room at the top for advancement.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the Emperor died, everyone gets a promotion at least, right? Just gotta, right. gotta see this through.
They're passing out moths like candy.
Yeah. If I just pay my dues one day, that Star Destroyer that we can't build anymore will be mine.
Right. So I don't mean this question in the way of, like, theory prediction, because some of it, even in this very next episode that comes out after this one, I think maybe leans a little bit into it. I think there's two ways to take the villain's motivations in this Mandalorian world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that you and I probably feel the same way about it. I think there's one route where the characters, and especially people like Moff Gideon, are motivated by, like, they're ideological. They want to resurrect the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other kind of motivation that I think season one leaned more into of, we're now, like, I don't care so much about resurrecting the Empire. I'm just a guy who has 5 Star Destroyers, so I'm just going to go, like, do some shit.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just, like, roving warlords. Like, what makes for a better story, do you think?
I mean, I feel the more interesting motivation is probably with the, you know, the former. Like, the roving warlord, you know, it's really only going to end, like, one of two ways. They, you know, conquer to the point they feel satisfied and wait for their inevitable betrayal or something like that. Or, you know, they get destroyed, right? But
sure.
I guess the more maybe nuanced or more interesting, you know, machinations lie in the, you know, like, the Empire cannot fail. You know, it is predestined, like, we will bring order, you know, so on and so forth.
So I take the other route. I like the non-idealist, non-true believer villain. And so it'll be fun to see which way the series, if it takes a side on this or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I like it is just that I guess we already have the other story.
Yeah.
Given that that's the way, like, Rise of Skywalker went, I'm more into not the Empire being the bad guy. I'm okay with Imperials, but give me something other than just the Empire. But I see your point too.
I mean, I think this whole period could be, I mean, very fascinating with, like, the, you know, the manner in which, you know, like, Rome falls here, essentially. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, like the Empire is running guns now, like, out of, you know, questionable sources. Like, are they resource constrained? You know, it kind of maybe goes back to, like, just the dirty stormtroopers in, you know, season one. Like, it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, there's so much, like, there's so much story here and just, you know, what you're seeing. And I feel like you maybe even see, like, a little bit of, like a microcosm of this, like, in the guy, like, in the storage room here, where he's ordered to, like, hold them off, and he's standing, mm-hmm. you know, dead center, like, pointing his gun at the door, He fires one shot, and he's like, nope, close the doors. Close the doors. All of them. All the doors right now.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, this guy is not going to smash his cyanide capsule in his teeth.
Yeah, like he's a true believer up until, you know, like there's some kind of measured resistance, and then it's right. Then it's close the doors. Dear God, please close the doors.
Yeah, these, again, the comedic timing in this episode is really impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
Kudos to everyone involved.
Yeah, I enjoyed this whole sequence like even more the second time around. It's so much fun. The close the doors guy, it's great.
He's great.
His gesturing, his mannerisms, he's just that resolve melting away into just complete, you know, fear. Fear and get me away from this in any way that you can.
Fear will keep the local doors in line.
Yes.
I think in addition to like the humor of it, what I really love about cutting back to the cockpit is it's a clever way to tell us how well or badly our heroes are doing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, they're just, you know, like, if you just have the action scenes, they're just shooting their way through rooms, so we don't really know, like, are they doing good? Are they doing bad?
Mm-hmm.
But to read the, like, fear on these guys' faces is a great way to communicate to us that this is going really well for the Mandalorians.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the two pilots' reactions are just great. Just the, you know, robotically repeating like the, you know, do you copy or do you come in orders, just knowing full well what the answer is.
Lots of fun stuff. We get Predator vision, we get Batman smoke bombs, we get all sorts of stuff. It's just a real cornucopia of goodness here.
Yeah, all the Mandalorian toys in full effect. You got Bo-Katan altering the deal, right?
Yeah. That's pretty fun after, you know, Mando's, like, supposed, you know, where does his bond kind of plot point from the previous episode. Some real Mandalorian disillusionment going on here for our hero.
And we learn, you know, the captain here is definitely a true believer, right?
He is. He is happy to crash it into the ground. Yeah, I love the... when he hits that cyanide capsule on his teeth, that it's almost like it has like forced lightning inside of it.
Yeah, right. It's just like little, like I think the Emperor was making those things and like mass producing them for the officers beforehand, just in case.
It's like when the Pope has to bless like all the commercially produced holy water.
Yeah.
The Emperor has to like endow all the cyanide capsules with a little bit of blue lightning. But it does look like when Vader is getting his teeth lightninged in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, right. You know, like I'm trying to get to the exact scene here, but his skull turns like a little bit transparent slightly. You can see like the teeth through it. Or am I imagining that?
I mean, whether it was the power of suggestion or not, it's definitely shades of Return of the Jedi in a really fun way.
Yeah, like his skull does, like, you can partially see, like, some of his skull through it and everything. So, yeah, it is very Return of the Jedi in that respect. Fall of the Third Reich, kind of, like, we're being overrun, you know.
Yeah, it's a real flying wolf's lair up here.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the last 20 minutes of Downfall, right?
Yeah. And I guess, you know, I mean, I guess we know that these Mandalorians, they're someone that we're going to see again, because Moff Gus is sort of, and we almost have a bit of like a love triangle here, and that Bo-Katan wants the Darksaber that Gus has, and Gus wants the Yoda that Mando has. So these people's destinies are definitely intertwined for the rest of the season.
And, I mean, I've always taken it that the Darksaber is like sort of the Excalibur, like right to rule, like Mandalore or the people thereof. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. I think in Rebels, they do a fun job of almost demythologizing a little bit. It's kind of like, well, no one's going to follow me just because I have this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this isn't going to do all the work that the legend says it's going to do, but it is going to do a lot of that work.
Yeah, it's still a reluctant necessity, maybe. something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, or at least a big bonus. Like, it can push you across the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got your cloned Kalus, it's nice to give him the sword of Kalus if you have it.
Otherwise, he's just some random clone, right?
right. Was that the original plot of Rise of Skywalker? Was that clone Kalish episode of Next Gen?
Maybe. Oh, man, that's making sense the more and more I think about it.
Anyway, Mando, he's got to head back to Toad Manor to pick up Baby Yoda, right?
Yeah. Really, really banking on that jetpack not being hit there when he jumps off the ship. But yeah, the toads have happily continued their line here, right?
And yeah,
Mando pulls Baby Yoda off just in time before he decides he needs another snack.
Everyone I talked to about this episode confessed being like terrified that he was going to eat that tadpole, like cold sweat, just like, oh crap, is this going to happen?
I think you're, it's after the fact, but your fears are slightly belated, but I think Mando says, like, we don't need another pet as he walks out, right?
Yeah, like, so, I think you misread Yoda's intentions, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, also grotesquely offensive to Michigan J. Frog Lady.
Yeah, here. Right? Oh, man. Glad that's hopefully the last they'll see of him.
Right. Thanks for the free babysitting.
I guess maybe word does get around here because we see the poor job that our favorite Mon Calamari has done repairing the Razor Crest here.
Yeah, woof. It does not even make sense. Those like ropes, like pulleys he's rigged up. What like, the hell is that?
It's like, what, you're taking this thing sailing, right? You're just going to... You need to splice the jib and, you know, all that stuff, right? Spaceship, watership, whatever.
And then we get a fun little button on the episode with that rickety ship, I guess is one, and then the second one is the little stowaway squid.
Yeah, Mama Squid's coming back for revenge here, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a fun little way to end it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rickety ship bit. I like the one piece of just junk that floats off right as he pops into hyperspace. That's a lot of fun.
That's great. I like this little scary starfish guy. It plays that same kind of pirate music from the bad guys when it's crawling up the rig.
Oh, good catch. I hadn't noticed that. And then some Baby Yoda slurping as he consumes it whole.
So, I don't know. Thoughts about this episode?
Worst cosmic wars ever.
Academy Award, the best movie ever made.
I'm afraid this gets my lowest rating ever. 7 thumbs up.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was a nice, I don't want to say comeback, but like a nice shift from the, the horror episode that was the previous one in the ice caves there. You know, we got some nice, well-referenced characters from Clone Wars, well-integrated into the story here. I mean, everything was, you know, very tight, especially the heist, as we talked about. Great setting. I mean, yeah, A+ episode overall. How about yourself?
Yeah, about the same. I really liked it. I've watched this 3 times, and it's held up all 3 times. And this is the kind of thing, maybe I'm forgetting something, but I think behind the Jawa episode, this is probably the funniest episode.
Yeah, I'd agree. There's like each episode has their little moments, but yeah, this, I mean, the finally balancing like the humor with like the action of the heist is, I mean, no mean feat. And it's one of those things where if it's done well, you'll, you know, unless you're really dissecting it, you might not even notice.
So on a Brian Mitchell Memorial rating from 0 stars up to I Love DVD, what are you going to give chapter 11 here?
We got, you know, 3 Mandalorians, you know, Clone Wars callback, you know, a heist on an Imperial cruiser, and, you know, all that. Honestly, gotta give it an I Love DVD. Great episode.
You've almost talked me into it. I think I'm gonna teeter a little bit, and I'm gonna give this one a 4.5 It's right on the cusp of there for me. I don't think there's anything in between this and an I Love DVD, but something was not quite there. I loved it, but it's not quite in that echelon for me. But I think it's, boy, is it just the whole heist scene.
Mm-hmm.
You could really make a case that this was the best action we've gotten in the whole series.
Yeah, I mean, thus far. Yeah,
I think it probably is.
I mean, you know, previous heists, you're dealing with a lot of, you know, robots and things that are maybe less satisfying than, you know, run and gun and like an Imperial cruiser.
Yeah, and I just think, again, like getting to switch to the Predator vision and cutting to the cockpit and having these fun minor bosses that you throw out the airlock. And
Yeah, that really just pushed it over the top, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. What about a really conspicuous character? Did you find someone you'd like to give a fur jacket to?
I live for furs. I worship furs.
Gold jacket, green jacket, who gives it?
Oh, please, won't you see my vest?
Maybe not someone in this case, but more like something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give it to the AT-AT crane, honestly. That thing was great. I just couldn't take my eyes off of it. And it's only on screen for 3 seconds or so. But
I had it, I had narrowed it down to between that and the cable knit sweater guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make mine be a costuming choice. Maybe a little obvious, but I'll give mine to the cable knit sweater Mon Cal repair guy.
Solid pick. I have maybe a fun honorable mention here that I noticed on both viewings. So if you'll pop over to around when the, our favorite frogs reunite. So I'm at about 554.
Uh-huh.
So you get Mando walking to them. And then on the left, there's like an unidentifiable creature in like some kind of like full kind of get up.
What and he's in the, is that?
He's in the background of like, you know, them, like in the background of them, like kind of their reuniting shots. But he drew my attention the first time and I was all eyes on him the second viewing and I could not figure out for the life of me what he was. Yeah, for our listener, he's maybe 7 feet tall. He's got this kind of like cloth sort of like apparatus kind of get up on him that comes to almost a point on his head. And he has like a little backpack and kind of breathing tubes coming down the front of him. So,
yeah, he does not make a lot of sense. This guy is unsettling.
Yeah, he's one of the few, you know, non-fish native people I saw in the background there, but. Yeah, he's, I could not take my eyes off him the first time.
Well, any closing thoughts on this one?
I know we've said this before, but, I mean, I really feel spoiled by this show in a lot of ways. Like, it's just so well executed and so much fun. And episodes like this are just, I don't know, I feel like we don't deserve this in a lot of ways. Like, it's just, It is so good. I wonder what terrible price we were going to have to pay because of this, right? Like,
that's right.
I'm too cautious. Like, nothing can be this good and not exact a price, Scott.
We are going to take a break from our regularly scheduled programming, and sometime in December, we are going to hit our listener with a holiday special as we watch the Star Wars Lego holiday special? Is that its name?
I believe, yeah, or something like the Lego Star Wars holiday special, some combination of those words.
And we have no idea what we're in store for there. It's a fun, like, I think sort of aimed for kids Star Wars holiday themed thing. And I think, you know, there's other Lego stuff out there, very sort of self-referential kind of humor. So we will have a lot of fun with that episode before we jump it back into The Mandalorian. And until then, I'd of course like to thank our listener. I'd like to thank Computer Music All-Stars for the music we do on the show. I'd like to encourage you to email us at weservedroids@gmail.com. And even more so, I would encourage you to make sure you're subscribed to the show. And if you're a true blue droid head, then you want to head over to patreon.com/weservedroids and make a contribution of $1, $2, or $4 per month to help us defray the costs of delivering this fine product to you. I think, is that all?
I think that's it. I guess we'll talk to you when we're doing the holiday special.
All right. Happy Life Day, Chris.
Happy Life Day, Scott.
Did we just record a whole episode that takes place on a water planet without making a bigger fish joke?
There's something about an anatomically correct
Beskar
suit that puts fire in a girl's lips.
You guys look like... What do they look like, Jimmy?
Dorks. They look like a couple of dorks.